We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. Last week, because if you did, you might have been struck, as I was struck, to see those stages of change playing out in our own time. Let me remind you what those stages are. These are the five stages that religion goes through when it's lost its way and it's finding its way again. There's a crisis of legitimacy, institutional malfunction, an emerging vision, a vanguard following a new path, and then finally, institutional transformation. Well, that stage model helps us understand religious change, it does, but it also describes how other institutions go through change as well. Governance, for example. Well, for some time now, we've seen plenty of, number one, crisis of legitimacy. We've seen plenty of, number two, institutional malfunction. But if you were looking this week, you might have also seen, quietly emerging, a new vision. There were not many voices. Mostly, our tribal leaders kept doing what they've been doing, feeding the tribes. The left kept peddling a story about Trump's followers being silent and complicit with his bigotry. There's nothing new there. Mostly the right kept peddling a story of how anti-American and radical and socialist the left is. Nothing new there either. So, if you were looking, you could find plenty of crisis of legitimacy and you could find plenty of institutional malfunction. But there were a few voices who were articulating an emerging vision. Even while the loudest voices were doing their best to delegitimize each other, a few quiet voices were imagining a new way forward. You know, I heard this one a couple of times, you know, we keep thinking that we're finally going to achieve a blue wave, or we're finally going to achieve a red wave, and that may be a fool's errand. We keep thinking that we can eliminate the other side, finally crush the other side, and then we'll be able to dictate terms the way that we think terms should be dictated, and we won't even have to reference them. And maybe, those voices were saying, that is not ever going to happen. Maybe we're going to have to learn to work together. But a corollary to that, I also heard this. We don't know the other. They didn't say this, but what I heard is the stories we tell ourselves about one another, maybe they're not true enough stories. Because why would they vote that way? That just doesn't make any sense. Maybe we don't really know them. And if we're going to work together, maybe we should get to know one another, what one another is after. Now, again, there was plenty of the same old, same old, but if you have McLaughlin in your mind, an emerging vision was in the mix this week. Now, again, it's not the point of today's lesson, but it is important because we are citizens. We have roles and we have duties as citizens. And with those stages of change in mind, we can be better citizens. We know what to look for, and when we see it, when we see an emerging vision, or when we see a vanguard on a new path, to whatever degree we are able, we can throw our support behind that because we know where the movement is going. That's why in the past I have mentioned represent.us. It's why I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, braverangels.org. We can't sugarcoat our differences. We cannot not work on racial equity. But what we can do is begin to understand one another better, which will pave the way of being able to work the only way it's going to work, together. Now, We've pretty much used up all the volunteer time and all the volunteer energy that I know about in our community by focusing on One Wake and by focusing on Temple's Table and each quadrant of the working the circle and all the things that are going on. The people bandwidth that I know about is all used up. So I am hoping that somebody in our community has bandwidth that I don't know about. Someone or a few someones who could learn about Braver Angels and who could organize us and communicate to us how we could support an emerging vision in our nation, a new path that we can follow as citizens. And if that's you, I'd love to talk. You can use the Contact Us button and we can talk about what that could look like. Okay, let's begin today's part of the lesson. Now, last week I said this about the five stages of repairing religion. If all that you see is number one and number two, if all you see is lost legitimacy and institutional malfunction, it is easy to assume that religion is just toxic. If all you see is a snapshot of a deconstructing moment, and you don't see the movement, the video that is reconstructing, well, it's easy to miss the point of what's going on. I say it all the time. This unraveling, this unpleasantness, this discomfort, all of this change that's going on, this is what historical transformation looks like. Nobody would ever do number five, institutional transformation, making our institutions work for us, if we weren't forced to deal with number two, institutional malfunction. When I was young, I had almost a decade of depression. It was unraveling my whole identity. It never occurred to me that to emerge from an unhealthy version of self, a version that was suffocating me, to emerge into a healthy version of self, well, the old one was going to have to unravel. Now, if somebody had pointed that out, well, sure, it makes sense. But when unraveling is all you see, it's very easy to despair. So today, I'd like to talk a bit more about this great unraveling that is going on in our Western religion. You'll remember last week, I said that religion is already fixing itself. It's already fixing what is broken. The only question that is out is, are we going to participate? Well, today, I want to give a little more texture to the repair work that is going on so that we can participate. And to do that, I want to talk about a couple of words: spirituality and religion. Spirituality is a much more amenable word these days than religion. When we say spirituality, we might not realizing it, but what we're doing by using that term is we're setting up a distance inside of ourselves between us and religion. Because spirituality evokes a deep hunger in our hearts. And we are pretty sure that religion can't feed that hunger. So the language that we have chosen these days indicates that internal tension between spirituality and religion. Spirituality is about one thing in our minds, religion about something altogether different. So our resistance is to religion. And what that resistance indicates is that we have seen, maybe we've even been unconscious of seeing it, but we have seen, number one, lost legitimacy. We have seen in religion institutional malfunction. Because right there in our language is the indication that we have a deep desire to move beyond religion's rules, to move beyond believing the right things and behaving the right ways. We long for new stories and new practices and new understanding, bigger, broader, more holistic. Our words are telling us that our hearts are saying we're dissatisfied. We're dissatisfied trying to connect to something bigger than myself by framing God or self or salvation the way that institutional religion has framed it. Keeping doing the things and keeping saying the words that we've been doing and that we've been saying, all the stuff that religion does, it just doesn't work. Now, if you've been here a while, you have heard me describe religion as a house, and spirituality lives in the house. Now, sometimes houses get toxic, radon and rats, black mold, but it's a house. So a lot of religious people stayed inside the house even though it was toxic because it's a house. We need a bed. We need a chair. We need a roof. We need a sink. So we stayed holding our noses, but we stayed and stayed and stayed until we couldn't stay anymore. And because we stayed inside the unhealthy for as long as we did, when we finally left, oh my God, what a relief, free at last. No more constraint upon my soul. No more being bound by the empty words. No more being bound by the empty rules. Thank God Almighty, free at last. But after a while, it begins to occur to us, hey, we are now homeless. Our lives don't bump up against other people who are on the same kind of spiritual journey that we are. We're actually on this spiritual journey alone. We have books, sure. We have podcasts, sure. We listen to some TED Talks. We'll go to a yoga studio. But what we don't have is a community engaged together on a shared spiritual journey. Now, I know what's happened for me, and I've seen it happen for a lot of people. When we find ourselves alone, one of the symptoms of that aloneness is that we keep circling around the same ideas again and again and again, because those are the ideas that are in our heads. And our heads, our own heads, that's all we've got when we're alone. So we keep going over the same territory again and again and again. And after a while, we begin to realize that we do access the interior divine better together than we do alone. We do begin to realize, you know, spirituality is, it just is a together kind of thing. Spiritual community is how we find our way to spirituality. But here's the problem. We can't go back. Rats and radon. But neither can we go forward, because there are no transformed institutions yet. That's not going to happen until stage 5. We may live to see it, may not. We're working hard on it. So there we are, stuck in that in-between place of religion fixing. We've left the old, but we've not yet built the new. You know what we could use in this in-between time? We could use a map. You know what we could use charting this new territory? We could use some landmarks that would help us orient ourselves, tell us what to look for so we can know where we're heading. Well, funny you should ask. Here's one. What we could use as our roadmap is those deep desires of our hearts. That could be our roadmap. That could help us know where we're heading when we go about rebuilding, walking a new path and rebuilding religious institutions. Now, when we, using our language, we set spiritual in opposition to religious, a good question we could be asking ourselves is, what were the deep soul hungers that we were trying to access when we used the word spiritual? And what is inadequate about religion that is not feeding that deep soul hunger? I had some notes in a file, and I didn't label where they come from, so I can't give credit where credit is due, but this author was drawing a distinction between two words, the Latin word religio and the English word religion. Now, I looked up both words, and sure enough, whoever the author was, it's a thing. When we use the word religion in the West today, what we mean, what we are saying, is heavily influenced by Western European history. And in particular, it's heavily influenced by the convergence of the Renaissance, the Reformation, and the invention of the printing press. That disruptive technology, the printing press, it was a game changer for Western religion. Once we were able to write down our religious ideas and do it cheaply, we did. And once people could buy our little religious pamphlets for a penny, they did. And so, pamphlet after pamphlet, document after document, decade after decade, century after century, we spun a series of ideas into our collective awareness. And we began to stitch together a comprehensive system, writing down our beliefs and our doctrines, and trying to persuade our readers of the rightness of our good religious ideas. And sometimes we did, but that's kind of not even the point. In a bigger sense, what we also did by taking on that endeavor was that we b- begin to reorient the whole Western idea of what religion even is, what religion even does. After the printing press, religion became something to believe in or not believe in. All of our pamphlet ideas about God and all of our pamphlet ideas about human nature and all of our pamphlet ideas about the spiritual journey got written down and then categorized and then organized and then articulated and then defended against anyone who was writing a different pamphlet with a different idea. And eventually, we divided ourselves up by the pamphlet that we believed, and religion became about whose pamphlet are you following? It became about belief. Religion somehow became about what is right and what is wrong, what is true and what is false, and do you believe the right thing? And so now, these many years later, when people say they aren't religious, what they're saying is, I'm not going to play the printing press pamphlet game. It just doesn't scratch the deep itch that I feel in my soul. It doesn't feed the deep spiritual hunger inside of me. Now, that other word, the Latin word, religio, it, on the other hand, means something very different. It was a word about subjective experience. It's not about cognitive assent. It's a word about experience. Experiences like awe, getting a glimpse of something bigger than ourselves. It was a word about devotion to, commitment to, bigger principles like love and kindness and justice and goodness. It is a word about those glimpses that we human beings get from time to time when we see through the dark glass. We get glimpses of transcendence. We get glimpses of ultimacy. We get glimpses of the matchless, the incomparable, glimpses of something so profound that it changes us. The numinous, the sacred, the mysterious, the transcendent, the divine. It's a word about wonder, awe, our breath taken away. It's about being brought up short, glimpsing something bigger than our ego selves can contain, bigger, truer, realer. When we reject religion to pursue spirituality, what we're doing is actually finding our way back to a forgotten path that once was what religion was. When we reject religion in order to pursue spirituality, we're pursuing the longings that are deeply embedded in the human heart and putting ourselves on a quest to touch the untouchable, to be changed by that touch. Putting ourselves on a quest that longs to draw from the interior divine and to live as carriers of and shining out the interior light. That is religio. And in this moment of awakening that we are undergoing, that is what we're finding our way back to. We are leaving the bankrupt notion that concepts and beliefs or do's and don'ts are a big enough reality for our souls. We're finding our way back to the wisdom and to the experience of those long gone before us that we touch and we see and we experience the untouchable, the unseeable, the unexperienceable, the interior divine, the interior light. So when we say spiritual but not religious, if we go back in history far enough, on the other side of the printing press, spiritual is religious. And finding our way back, fixing our broken religion, that's what is happening right now as we emerge into McLaughlin's stage 3 and 4. There is an emerging vision of finding our way back to those experience-driven versions of spirituality. There is a new path being set before us. The human soul was never going to be satisfied following a list of approved behaviors. We were never going to be satisfied assenting to a list of approved beliefs. That was never big enough for the expansive souls that we carry. It was never going to be enough to belong to an exclusive club, people who believe and behave the way I believe and behave. That was never going to be a big enough version of us. Our souls were never going to be satisfied by just getting the right answers, getting the codified doctrines or the prohibitions so that we make sure we stay away from sex and drugs and rock and roll, lying, cheating, stealing. Our origin story tells us that we are much bigger than that. We are made of the same mysterious, unknowable stuff that God is made of. Now, we have no idea what God is made of. We have no idea what that word even means. But the deep that is inside of us calls to the deepest deep. Carriers of divine light, reflecting the very image of God. Our hungers are just too deep. Our options are too expansive, too vast, too wonderful to be satisfied conforming to some belief or some behavior. That deep longing, that could be a roadmap for us. That could point us where to begin building our new transformed institutions. Because our deep longing is for experience. Now, everyone who's been on this journey knows that the experience is imperfect. It comes in little snatches and peaks and sideways glances. But experience. We can experience the transcendent, something bigger than our ego selves. And that's where fixing our broken religion is taking us. We broke it, but it's being fixed. And when we participate, we get to be part of a religion reborn. We get to be part of a society reborn. When we participate, we get to be part of organizing a religion around those deep hungers of our transcendent human souls being transformed by something that is bigger than ego. Now, I know I wrote those words, and they are pretty. I wrote those words, and they are abstract, and they are lofty, and they are dreamy. So much so, they run the risk of making religion seem so woo-woo that we can't get our heads around what it would even mean for poor saps like us to live that kind of spiritual life. But big and grand and lofty, that's really important. It's important because those grand notions keep pointing us to something bigger than a gritty little ego self version of religion. Those lofty aspirations keep pointing us back to an uncontainable quest for an uncontainable experience of an uncontainable indwelling divine. But to get practical, when we're working the circle, and how practical is that? When we're practicing examine together or sharing life stories together or doing self-awareness worksheets together, those grand words, that lofty story, it tells us what we're doing when we're doing those things. In pretty undramatic ways, pretty incremental change kinds of ways, what we're doing is we're following the path of those gone before us who tell us that there are micro glimpses to be had of a bigger reality. They're so micro, we sometimes might not even register them when they happen. But nevertheless, over time, those small experiences change us. And eventually, the ancient testimony is pretty consistent. Eventually, some days later, some months, years later, we look up from our days and we say, oh, well, you look at that. I have been changed. Will you look at that? I am more my divine center self than I was. I am less gotta be in charge, gotta run the show, false self. I'm less my fear self. I'm less my anxiety self. I'm less my power and control self. I'm less my not valuable self. The point of the circle isn't just doing a set of practices. We work the circle. We do those practices because steadily, consistently, over time, they keep pointing us back to that bigger story, touching the untouchable. They keep us looking for, and how many times have you heard it? We find what we look for. They keep us looking for something that is bigger than ego self, something loftier, something grander, a story that keeps pointing us forward in our very ordinary, very normal, very day-to-day spiritual lives. And so, welcome to the work. Welcome to the work of fixing our broken religion. And may you be transformed as I am being transformed, as many of us are being transformed. May we together access the spiritual, the deep longing of the human heart. And may we do it better together than alone. And may you, as so many, look up and see, ah, my soul has healed. You know what? And now that my soul has healed, let me move out into my world and be an agent of healing there too. May that be so among us. Amen. Well, if you would, please prepare your tithes and offerings, which has come to mean go online and donate. And while you're doing that, Scott emailed out our finance report this week, and he told us that we were way down in September, about $8,000 behind budget. Now, we spent less, so we're really only down about $5,000, but he said that's not sustainable. Now, he doesn't want to cry wolf, and 1 month is not a trend, but let's notice. And if you're behind on your giving, it's a good time to catch up. He also stressed, if your income has been affected by the pandemic, our community wants to stand with you. We gathered some monies at the very beginning of quarantine to help us help one another get through this thing together. If you are having pandemic troubles, use the contact us button. It'll get to me and I'll get it to Scott. We have some common thread resources, but Scott and his team, they know a lot about resources that exist as well that aren't just ours. So here's the thing, don't go through pandemic troubles alone. And as I say, if you get to keep your job during the pandemic, our spiritual community is a good place to invest your love and your time and your energy and the dollars that it takes to be a healthy community. Again, you can donate on our website. You'll find several options when you go there. Okay, Gene, what are folks thinking about? What is stirring up in folks' hearts?
So Rebecca says, for many, including myself, it's much easier to choose an established religion and consume all of its accepted doctrines than to exercise our own spiritual muscles and listen to those deep internal desires. Cindy Appleby responded that saying, it takes time to learn to trust and feel safe with the guidance of our deep internal desires, and only by doing all the practices can we tap into the truest true of our soul's wisdom.
So I grew up in a very broad swath of American Christianity. The three main wings of the church, the evangelical church, the charismatic church, and the liturgical church. I had time in each one of those. I was involved in a ministry that had a very heavy Catholic presence. So Catholic, Protestant, evangelical, charismatic, liturgical, I've been in them all. In the time that I had in the charismatic or Pentecostal church, one of the things that was emphasized in that moment, which is really an awakening moment in the history of American Christianity, really Western Christianity, was the idea that, hey, you know what? We are all carriers of the indwelling divine. Hey, you know what? The interior voice. Hey, you know what? The Spirit of God is within us. Hey, and that was an organizing principle. But because of the thing that both Rebecca and Cindy bring up, we also gravitated to telling people exactly what they were supposed to do and exactly where they were supposed to be and when they were supposed to be there and how they were supposed to live their spiritual lives. So we say you've got this unlimited, unbounded reality inside of you, but you better listen to what we're telling you to do. And the reason is because it's really messy to tell people to listen to their interior voice, because some crazy shit comes out when you give people access to their own interior voice. And so anybody who wants to run a smooth organization says, well, we better not do that. We better lock this thing down. And it is messy to teach people to listen to the own interior voice because we get it wrong so much. But it really is our only option. The other option is a religion that's killing us. We have got to learn the skill sets of accessing the interior voice. We've got to come to the place where we do it better together, where we build the checks and the balances into our lives to help us learn how to do that. That really is our only choice. And it's not just easier for people to follow an established religion. It's easier for the established religion to just tell people, you better just follow us. What else are people saying, Gene?
So Sarah Joyce says, this is the metaphor of Jesus being crucified and rising from the dead. It's painful to lose something that worked in the past but is no longer working anymore. It's only when it's died we can build something new, kind of like a phoenix rising from the ashes.
Oh my goodness, Sarah Joy, what a beautiful metaphor. And one, boy, have we worked that metaphor for a long time. That is so descriptive of what we're going through. That death is precedes new life. That is the whole story. Yes, that's just beautiful, Sarah. Sarah Joy. One more.
So Mariah says, I think that part of experiencing doing for me includes that part at the end in which I get to look back at who I was at the start of the season. For the starting person and the ending person, both to have existed in their own times feels pretty divine. And as you say, far better to experience those glimpses and experiences together.
Yeah. That's a great way of putting it, Mariah. Yeah. All right. If you would, put your hand on your heart and let us remember as we go that we are all, every one of us, carriers of the indwelling divine. We carry love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and courage and strength and wisdom and virtue. It's all in there because we're made of the same stuff God is made of. And if you would, extend your other hand to our city. Let's look for opportunities to share what's in us with the people that we live and work and go to school with, looking for opportunities to repair and heal our worlds. Amen. God bless you. We are dismissed. Love one another as you go. Check somebody in the live stream there and say hello. Check in on how they're doing and see you next week. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.